From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Remember Johnny Carson goofing off with his affable sidekick Ed McMahon, the amazing Kreskin, and Karnak the Magnificent? Carson's shtick was a gentle send-off, a sweet lullaby before bed. Boy, has the late-night terrain changed. Jon Stewart got it started, and today's hosts, Kimmel, Colbert, Noah, Myers, and Oliver, are running with it. Night after night, they're tackling heavy social issues with edgy humor, turning our living rooms into politically charged theater. This hour On Point, late-night comedy's serious message. You can join us on air or online. What do you want from late night? Laughs and a soft send-off into slumberland, or hard-edged political satire? Who are you watching? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. Joining me today, from New York City, Bill Carter, CNN media analyst, contributor to The Hollywood Reporter and a host on Sirius. He covered television for The New York Times for more than 25 years and is the author of several books, including The War for Late Night, When Leno Went Early and Television Went Crazy. He wrote a piece for CNN Money on Tuesday headlined How Jimmy Kimmel Became America's Conscience. Thanks for being here, Bill. Great to have you.
Nice to be with you, Jane.
And with us from Syracuse, New York, Robert Thompson, the founding director of the Blear Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University, where he's also a professor. He is the editor of an ongoing series of books about television published by Syracuse University Press. Great to have you, Bob. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
So, Bill Carter, I'll start with you. How is late-night comedy changing in the era of Donald Trump?
Well, it obviously has gained a central focus, I guess you would say. There's never been, in my opinion, there's never been a topic that has so galvanized late-night comedy, both the writers and the hosts, as the Trump administration. And it really beginning with the Trump campaign, but certainly extending through the administration. It is the dominant theme virtually every night. I think I could probably say every night for some of the hosts. And it is like nothing we've seen before, because the hosts have always done topical comedy, whatever's in the news. For example, they'll basically go through the news and say, you know, let's talk about this, let's talk about that. It seems like every night starts with Trump, and sometimes it's exclusively Trump. You used to hear hosts like Jay Leno say, well, let's see what else is in the news.
Right.
You don't hear that anymore.
Right.
You don't,
right.
There's nothing else in the news. So,
right.
Especially for like Colbert and Seth Meyers and guys who've really thrown their lot in with this kind of all-out political satire totally aimed at Trump. And the other thing that's different is point of view on a sleeve. And yes, Jon Stewart started that. But now we see it in virtually every host. Their point of view is evident. They're not trying to hide it. They're not just making fun of Trump. They are making fun of him with a real edge. Mm-hmm. And it's not just a scalpel. It's a sledgehammer that they're using.
Bob Thompson, you call late-night comedy today the fifth estate. What's the role to your mind of comedy?
Yeah, well, right. If the fourth estate keeps, you know, governmental institutions in check, that being journalism, comedy for the most of this century has really kind of become the thing that keeps journalism in check. Let's remember when Jon Stewart really got going. I think it was at the his coverage of the 2000 election. Before that, he started on Comedy Central in, what was it, January of 99, they were still doing Monica Lewinsky jokes. The impeachment was still going. But with that 2000 election, the hanging Chad election, that show really became not just a satire of American politics, but a satire of how American politics was covered by television. And in that sense, I think since the Jon Stewart era began with this new century, every single person on television who covers the news has got to have that voice of Jon Stewart and now John Oliver and Samantha Bee and the rest of it humming in their heads in the background, because those comedies really take television journalism to task. Mm.
Bob, you've said that Jon Stewart is to political comedy what Edward R. Murrow was to journalism. Here's a little bit of Jon Stewart. In 2003, just before the U.S. invaded Iraq, Stewart having fun with President Bush's speech announcing Saddam Hussein and his sons having 48 hours to leave the country or face war.
As for the Iraqi army, Bush is apparently its commander-in-chief as well. and all Iraqi military and civilian personnel should listen carefully to this warning. In any conflict, your fate will depend on your actions. Do not destroy oil wells, a source of wealth that belongs to the Iraqi people.
He added, Iraqi people like Daik Cheney of Al-Aberton.
Bill Carter, what did John Stewart do that was different than anything that came before him?
Well, I sort of think he invented the point of view comedy in late night. Mm. He came to each night with, you know, an editorial position. You know, I knew John well, and I talked to him, and I said, John, you're really doing a journalist's job a lot of the time. And he fought that ferociously. But he was a political cartoonist in essence. You know, there wasn't real distance, I don't think, between Thomas Nast and what John Stewart did. And I just think he changed the conversation by doing that. And, of course, he won the Emmy Award like 10 or 11 times in a row. So he certainly got the attention, as Bob points out, of all the other comics.
Well, Bob, he changed the conversation and people trusted him. They trusted what he said, Bob.
They did. And I didn't mean to be hyperbolic with that Edward R. Murrow comparison, but I think we can't underestimate how important John Stewart was to this new, you know, we all knew what investigative journalism was. John Stewart brought about this idea of investigative comedy. And there was a moment, we used to talk about Walter Cronkite as being the most trusted man in America. He had the nerve to actually end his broadcasts with the phrase, and that's the way it is. And we believed it. And he believed it. John Stewart, in an odd sort of way, certainly not with the – he wasn't in the center of the culture the way Cronkite was. But he did, for a while, seem to have that kind of most trusted man kind of mantle, which is why I think so many people missed him when he stepped away right at the beginning of this extraordinary chapter. But think of the people that came out of that college of The Daily Show. Steve Carell, Stephen Colbert, Samantha Bee, Trevor Noah, who was there for about a day, Larry Wilmore, and I'm forgetting a whole bunch of others. That really became a journalism school for investigative comedy.
So before all of those people, way back when, in the 60s and 70s, we had Jack Paar, right, and Steve Allen and these other iconic TV comedians. Here's a bit from that time. In 1960, then-Senator John F. Kennedy became the first presidential candidate to appear on Late Night, joining Jack Paar on The Tonight Show.
This is the great office, and therefore I run for the presidency because for the same reason I ran for the House, because this is the place where action is going to take place, affecting the lives of this of our people and every people in the next 4 or 8 years.
And here's Johnny Carson during his monologue on The Tonight Show. He would constantly rib the city of Burbank, for example, where the show was taped.
Well, for example, they have a nightclub for senior citizens out here, the Slip Disco. It's over on Olive. It really swings. The only trouble is you go to the bar, you set your drink down, your glass. You know, somebody drops their teeth into it.
Bill Carter, I mean, Carson had Vietnam. He had Watergate. He had assassinations. I mean, he handled those things differently, though, didn't he? Tell us about that.
Well, he did. I mean, Johnny was – he tried to be the comic for everybody, for sure. He had his points of view. I mean, he certainly took a point of view sort of on Vietnam, not the way the guys would now. And obviously, during Watergate, he was, you know, skewering that pretty severely. But in essence, Johnny's plan was play to the middle of the country. He was very smart, very savvy guy. And, you know, if you think about late night TV, he came on at 11:30 at night. Well, that's 10:30 in Chicago. You have more potential viewers in the Midwest than you do in the East. And I think he sort of said, let's aim for that, because he thought he would get New York and L.A. and he could, you know, bring the whole country together if he aimed in the middle. And he didn't want to tip his hand. You wouldn't be able to say, oh, Johnny, for sure he voted for Kennedy, or he voted for Johnson, or he voted for Nixon. You would never actually really know that. Whereas today, of course, you have no doubt about where these guys are coming from. It really wasn't a different time in the sense that comedians probably were going to be left of center then as they are now, because most artists happen to be that way. But I think it was a point that he really wanted to reach everybody. And he had, by the way, a massive audience. Johnny's audience by today's standards was gigantic. And he wanted to keep, you know, everybody tuning in and laughing at, you know, what was going on in Burbank. No one's going to be offended by that.
Bob Thompson, you talk about Bill talked about the point of view on the sleeve, right? And I guess I'm curious, have we evolved to a place where people expect their late night hosts to have opinions, to have a strong point of view and to share it and to entertain through that?
Well, I don't know if we expect it. That's certainly what we're getting in almost every case, except there is one person who is still carrying on the Johnny tradition, and that's Fallon. And he's carrying it on via Leno. When everybody else, after Letterman hit the scene in the early 80s, everybody else started doing late-night comedy that was almost a parody of what it had been before. And everybody fell into that Letterman camp, except Leno. Leno kept working in that Carson tradition, and Fallon is still today. If you look at the night that after the Las Vegas shootings, Colbert, Trevor Noah, Kimmel, Conan, Seth Meyers, James Corden, all of them addressed the issue of gun control. Fallon's show, The Tonight Show, Johnny's old show, opens up with a kind of a nice moving song by Miley Cyrus and Adam Sandler. That was the way in which they dealt with their coming back after Las Vegas. I think that speaks volumes about the fact that that Tonight Show, Johnny, Leno, Fallon tradition has still got traction. And while Colbert is now beating Fallon in the overall numbers, Fallon's still beating in the desired demographic.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron. Blue Apron partners with sustainable farms, fisheries, and ranchers to bring you everything you need to create incredible home-cooked meals. Ingredients come pre-measured, so there's no food waste, and it's delivered right to your door. Rediscover how fun cooking can be while enjoying seasonally inspired recipes and exploring new flavors and cuisines. No commitment. Get the meals only when you want. Get your first three Blue Apron meals free, plus free shipping, by visiting blueapron.com/OP.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about late night comedy this hour and its edgy political humor, and you can join the conversation. Trump supporters, are you offended by the constant skewering of the president? Have you turned it off? Talking this hour with Bill Carter, CNN media analyst, and Robert Thompson from Syracuse University. We were talking about Jimmy Fallon before the break. Here he is. Unlike most late night hosts, he's taken a decidedly apolitical stance since the election. He caught a lot of flack for playfully ruffling Donald Trump's hair last September before a campaign rally.
Donald, I want to ask you, because the next time I see you, you could be the president of the United States. I just wanted to know if there's something we could do that's just not presidential, really, or something that we can do now that we're just both civilians.
Like what? This is... I'm not liking the sound of this. Go ahead.
Can I mess your hair up?
Bill Carter, may have been funny at the time, yeah, but he was widely criticized for that.
Yeah, I think the timing of that was not great. It was too close to the election. And I want to say something about Jimmy. Jimmy is a different kind of comic. He's never been a political comic. He's always been a guy with other talents. He's an impressionist. He plays music. He doesn't do that kind of commentary, so I don't think he should try, if it's not in his wheelhouse, to try. However, in a case like that, you can mess Donald Trump's hair in that instance if you've already asked him two or three really good questions in an interview. He was not doing that many interviews. So if Jimmy had asked a few questions that were, newsmaking, or at least centered on the news, I think he could have gotten away with that. But because he didn't, it looked like he was, A, too soft on the guy, which at the time a lot of viewers were like, what? How can you be like that, this in the middle of this campaign? And B, it looks like he didn't care. It didn't matter to him. So I think it played badly for Jimmy, and I think he regretted it. In fact, I know he did.
Let's get some.
When you hear that now,
okay, Bob, go ahead.
I swear that here, I saw that when it first aired, but hearing it now, it sounds like a joke from Colonial Williamsburg, the ye olden days,
yeah,
kind of thing.
It really does.
But I think the other problem, too, was that NBC had all kinds of relationships with Trump. He had been on The Apprentice. They had had him host Saturday Night Live. So that mussing of the hair almost just seemed, another one of the company's attempt to play nice with their presidential candidate.
Here's David in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, David. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
So I'm 18, And so for a lot of my peers, they are really just not interested in the political process right now. They're very apathetic about it. And from what I've talked with my friends, they've really drawn a lot of interest and actually started to pay attention through these late-night comedy shows of, like, seeing Noah kind of talking about the actual issues of police brutality and violence. And, I mean, while I do feel like this does run a bit of a risk of kind of creating a political echo chamber, it is, I feel like it is more important for, like, the millennials and such to actually be paying attention to the political process.
So who do you watch, David? Like, who do you like?
So I'll, like, watch John Oliver, Samantha Bee, Trevor Noah, Seth Meyers. And for me, it's really interesting.
David, thank you. Let's get another David in Williamsville, New York. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hello, one and all. I come from a split marriage. My wife would rather not go to sleep to anything edgy, whereas I do enjoy that.
Uh-oh.
Comedy Central came up with a genius of a solution. They replay The Daily Show and The Opposition the following morning during our morning coffee, so she can absorb it then as she wakes up and heads out to work in a grumpy mood about the country. Whereas, you know, and I can catch it maybe even for a second time.
David, thank you. Let me play this sound from one of Comedy Central's stars, Trevor Noah, The Daily Show. He replayed the graphic dash cam footage showing a Minneapolis, Minnesota police officer fatally shooting Philando Castile as he sat in his car with his girlfriend and his daughter.
I won't lie to you. When I watched this video, it broke me. Like, it broke me. You see so many of these videos, and you start to get numb. But this one, seeing the child, that little girl, getting out of the car after watching a man get killed, it broke my heart into a little pieces.
Bob Thompson, there's a sincerity now, a sort of from-the-heart approach when these tragedies happened.
There is, and I think Trevor Noah is really able to, he's kind of come in as an outside observer. He constantly reminds us that he's not from here, and he is able to do some of those subjects, I think, more effectively than anyone else. And I would also like to bring up one person who was on Comedy Central for a very short period of time, who I think in many ways was doing the most important work ever, which was Larry Wilmore, who followed Trevor Noah. He had a completely different voice when he was covering the Confederate flag issue, the church shootings, the police shootings. He was doing these impassioned essays. It reminded me of Murrow taking on the migrant workers issue way back in 1960. But it demonstrates that not everybody, many are called to do this kind of thing, but few are chosen. And of course, Larry Wilmore is not in that slot anymore.
We heard Trevor Noah. Here's Jimmy Kimmel on Monday night, tearing up as he talked about the mass shooting in his hometown of Las Vegas and the fact that politicians were set to debate a bill legalizing gun silencers.
We have a major problem with gun violence in this country, and I guess they don't care. And if I'm wrong on that, fine, do something about it, because I'm sick of it. And, you know, I want this to be a comedy show. I hate talking about stuff like this. I just want to, you know, laugh about things every night. But that, it seems to be coming increasingly difficult lately. It feels like someone has opened a window into hell.
And then back in May, just a few days after Jimmy Kimmel's son was born with a congenital heart defect, he spent his monologue talking about his son's health problems and his feeling on healthcare policy and coverage for people like his son who have pre-existing conditions.
If your baby is going to die, and it doesn't have to, It shouldn't matter how much money you make. I think that's something that whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or something else, we all agree on that, right? I mean, we do.
Bill Carter, you wrote a piece this week titled How Jimmy Kimmel Became America's Conscience. Explain what you meant.
Well, that was not my term for him, but on several places in social media, people were calling him that. And it's obviously because of these two issues where, you know, he was speaking from the heart. I mean, he got a lot of grief, obviously, from the political right for both of those things. And people saying, well, he's just a talk show host or a comedian. What right does he have to talk about this? And I think most people who watched him realized it was unbelievably sincere. I mean, the guy's child was involved, almost died. And he obviously thought about other people in that position. And because he has a lot of empathy, I guess that doesn't play well for some people. But then it's then the other – the shooting incident happens, and it happens to be in his hometown. And I think he was speaking from the heart, and I think people also realize Jimmy Kimmel is not – you know, he's not a Hollywood liberal going to, you know, parties and stuff. This is a regular guy. I mean, you couldn't find a more regular guy than Jimmy Kimmel. I know him quite well. And, you know, I think people really listened. I think he really made points well because of that. And I think he, especially in the healthcare thing, he was very significant. I mean, I don't know if anybody can be significant in the gun control issue. But I think the healthcare thing was very close. And you got to give him some credit or blame if you're on the other side for what the outcome was.
Here's Charlie in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi, Charlie. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I guess as a conservative, I love to hear the comics on both sides skewer the politicians and the policies so that because it's very entertaining to hear the humor that is actually involved in all those policies. However, when a comedian starts to become a pundit and tries to express himself as having expertise in policy in a non-humorous way, I'm very concerned. Jimmy Kimmel talking about health care should not be the one as an expert. There are people who study the issue all the time and have years of experience. Jimmy Kimmel talking about health care could actually cause harm of people not to understand the issue fully.
What if he's talking about his own son, though, Charlie? This is a personal experience. You don't want to hear it either way. Is that what you're saying?
No, Jimmy, but he didn't say this was my son and what that. He was talking about the whole health care policy. And there are people who actually study the issue, like I said, and what is trying to be done to help as many people as possible.
Charlie, thank you very much.
Can I add something to that? Because remember what happened was that the senator who pushed this, Senator Cassidy from Louisiana, who pushed this last bill, had come on the air and said, whatever happens in a future bill, there'll be a Jimmy Kimmel test. And the Jimmy Kimmel test will be if a child like his son is, you know, threatened and will not be able to get health care because of that, we will not pass it. And Jimmy Kimmel looked at that bill and said, no, this bill doesn't do that. And you thrust me into this.
Let me play it, Bill. Here it is.
This guy, Bill Cassidy, just lied right to my face. Do you believe that every American, regardless of income, should be able to get regular checkups, maternity care, etc., all of those things that people who have health care get and need?
Yep.
So yep is Washington for nope, I guess.
Bill Carter, continue.
Yeah, so, you know, I think in this case, and Jimmy's made this point a lot of times, you know, somebody literally called it the Jimmy Kimmel test. Is he supposed to walk away and ignore that? I mean, he didn't ask to be a pundit. He had pundit thrust upon him. And I think he was willing to say, you know, people expect me to step up and talk about kids whose parents don't have lots of money. He admitted he had lots of money. He admitted he could take care of his kid. But he also pointed out that his son, when he's 20 years old, will again need surgery because of this heart condition. And if laws like this were to pass, he says, that he would never be able to get insurance for that. And I think that's why he was so impassioned
about it. Bob Thompson, Jimmy Kimmel, you know, must have gotten, did get blowback from conservative and pro-Trump voices. You know, he must have expected it. There's caller Charlie saying exactly that.
Well, yeah, it was an extraordinary 3 days. He first did his first impassioned speech. I think that went about 8 minutes. Then he got a lot of blowback. He came back the next night and did about 9 straight minutes. And then he came back on the third night as well. So this was a kind of a concerted developing essay that he was putting together. The other thing, though, is that, yes, Jimmy Kimmel is not a doctor. Jimmy Kimmel is not a policy researcher. But I went back and watched all three of those bits that he did on health care. And there was a lot of research behind that. It wasn't like he was just talking, you know, out of the, you know, wrong side of his mouth. Clearly they had gathered material. He was giving stuff that I think was sound facts. But the extraordinary thing was even amidst his tears and the autobiographical tragedy of his child, he still managed to tell some really good jokes. He said, well, people say I should give this this guy the benefit of the doubt. And he says, I do. I doubt that he's going to give us any benefits. That was a really funny joke. He rechanged the Jimmy Kimmel test to meaning that the Jimmy Kimmel test means only Jimmy Kimmel can afford it. And I think Kimmel has this uncanny ability to tell funny jokes within tears in impassioned ways. But part of it is that in both these cases, it was personal, his hometown, his own child. This kind of tear business is a non-renewable resource. And if Jimmy Kimmel does that every week, I don't think it's going to work.
Let's get Richard in here from Dedham, Massachusetts. Hi, Richard. Glad you waited. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I think one thing that's being left out here is that for about 30 years, talk radio and Fox News have been dominated by incredible bombardments of right-wing thinking. That other caller, does he think Rush Limbaugh is qualified to speak? I think this is a final reaction when all of the things on right-wing radio and right-wing television have led us to Donald Trump, and now at last the other side is speaking up.
Richard, thank you. Bill Carter, what about this hard-charging Trump political humor? So much of it is so pointedly anti-Trump. I mean, if you're a Trump supporter, how do you watch this? I mean,
I'm not sure they do. I would think very few do. I mean, I think they have sort of closed that audience off, but they weren't watching Jon Stewart either. People on the right didn't like Jon Stewart. I shouldn't say in sweeping numbers, but largely. I think the difference here with Trump is that the comedians, they don't like this guy. They're not just making fun of the guy. This isn't just regular comedy. This is kind of rage comedy at times. They're really outraged. They're angry. And they're swinging from the hip. I mean, some of the things that Stephen Colbert has said are just extraordinary. I mean, he just says really kind of incredibly sweeping denunciations of this guy in a funny way. He's very funny about it. But I mean, this is what's very unusual. And you know, this is what he really believes. This isn't something that he's doing for laughs or because he thinks he's getting ratings out of it. This is what he really believes. And I think that's quite different from anything I can ever remember.
Here is Stephen Colbert on Tuesday night this week dissecting President Trump's visit to hurricane-ravaged Puerto Rico, including the moment he handed out flashlights to victims.
Trump also passed out some flashlights, though he wasn't sure why. You don't need them anymore. 95% of the island doesn't have electricity. You don't need flashlights anymore because all these news cameras at my photo op are pointed at me and they have lights on them, and I am here for the long haul. Time to go. Bye.
Bob Thompson, I mean, what do you see here? Do these writers need to look at the totality of the audience? What about the other side? What about Trump supporters and their perspective?
Well, I agree with what Bill just said. I mean, I can't imagine if the writers started trying to embrace a wider audience, I don't think Stephen Colbert could deliver that material. Let's remember, he started out that late night show really rocky, and it wasn't until they made this move to this much more aggressive political stuff that things really started to get going. There is, though, when I hear some of these jokes, one of the first callers said used the phrase echo chamber. If you watch all the late night comedy, there actually is a literal echo chamber in that there are so many mornings. I'll watch all the late night shows in the morning, and so many times you'll hear the same joke on 2, 3, sometimes 4 of the late night shows. Mm.
We are discussing late-night hosts using their platforms to tackle serious social issues this hour, and you can join the conversation. Is Jimmy Kimmel speaking for you when he takes on health care and gun control? Do you binge-watch Stephen Colbert? Here's a clip from Saturday Night Live, the first show after the 2016 presidential election. Kate McKinnon, in character as defeated Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton, sat solo at a grand piano for the show's cold open, performing Leonard Cohen's iconic signature song, Hallelujah. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
And even though it all went wrong, I'll stand before the Lord of Song with nothing on my tongue but hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
I'm not giving up, and neither should you. And live from New York, it's Saturday night.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about today's political satire in late night comedy, and you can join the conversation. Do you enjoy this brand of humor? Do these voices comfort you or set you off? You can follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Great panel. Bill Carter, CNN media analyst. Robert Thompson, director of the Blair Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. Let me play some more sound here. Here is the day after Donald Trump won the presidency, Seth Meyers, talking about how he and his wife watched the election returns at a friend's house.
Before we left, we put our 8-month-old son to bed, and I was holding him, and I said to him, when you wake up tomorrow morning, we might have our first female president. And then when we came home around midnight, I went into his room, shook his crib until he woke up, and screamed, we have to get out of here!
After the shooting at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, Florida, in June of 2016, Samantha Bee, host of Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, unleashed a scathing monologue ripping the NRA and Florida's Governor Rick Scott, whose response to the shooting was that everybody should pray.
Until we as a nation find the political will to reject a mass shooting per day as the price of freedom, I'm just going to pray. Are you there, God? It's me, Sam. Please. Bless the victims and their friends and families in their time of unspeakable pain. Give us the courage to say no more. And while you're at it, please send the NRA a plague of boils. Amen.
And in May, John Oliver, host of HBO's Last Week Tonight, responded to the news that Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, may be the current White House official named as a person of interest in the Russia investigation.
Now, some have suggested that that could be Jared Kushner, but it seems unlikely because while he is technically significant and legally a person, he in no way qualifies as of interest. He is the least interesting human on Earth. He is the person equivalent of an empty room painted eggshell. He's like a white bread sandwich where the middle is just a third slice of white bread.
Let's get Michael in here from Columbia, Missouri. Hi, Michael. Welcome to On Point.
Hi. Thank you.
Oh, dear. I'm sorry. I can't hear you, Michael. I hope you'll call back. Let's get Mary in here from Charlotte, North Carolina. Mary, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. Just kind of wanted to point out Visas and Miro. I haven't heard them in the conversation yet. The most diverse duo in comedy, late night, kind of disrupting the late night landscape, if you will. Young millennials that got their start on Twitter and have a show on Viceland, giving kind of unfiltered takes on what's going on politically and racially in the U.S.
Good, Mary. Thank you. Bill Carter, you speak to this. What about the diversity in late night?
Well, I think it was interesting that Bob and you, I guess, mentioned earlier, both Trevor Noah and Larry Wilmore, and Larry's not on anymore. But, you know, Trevor Noah is a person of color. So when he talks about an incident like the shooting, again, you have at least got somebody who has, I don't want to say skin in the game, because that's kind of too bad, heavy a metaphor. But you know, and we haven't had much of that before, and I think that's important. I think this interesting that this caller mentioned, yet more people, and you know, and if you look all over the place, there's many, many other places for this kind of satire. You cited Saturday Night Live, but boy, have they been a player in this.
Right.
I think what's fascinating to me is that you have people who here who are upset and outraged, but the country is upset. I think that's the other thing that's playing out here, is that every day there's news that upsets people, almost every day. There's news that upsets people in some way. It seems like since the election itself, we've had so many developments in across the landscape, from the whole Russia investigation to Korea to all the other things that have gone on, to the Secretary of State calling the president a moron. Amazing things have happened. Unprecedented things are happening. And I think the country is definitely on edge. And I think they turn to these comics because they want to have, I guess, a little affirmation of that kind of concern and also maybe a little relief. I think all those things are at work.
Here's a clip from Saturday Night Live. After calling President Trump a cheap cracker on a Weekend Update on Saturday Night Live last Saturday in response to his poor response to Puerto Rico, co-host Michael Che now facing a racist backlash. Here's that.
This isn't that complicated, man. It's hurricane relief. These people need help. You just did this for white people twice. Do the same thing. Go tell Melania to put on her flood heels, get some bottled water, some food, pack up some extra Atlanta Falcons Super Bowl t-shirts, and write them a check with our money, you cheap cracker.
Bob Thompson, your response.
Well, I mean, it was funny. It was pointed. I don't know. I guess I don't like any use of terms that are making fun of people with regards to race. But Michael Che saying cheap cracker to the president of the United States, I don't think is up there on my list of things to be worried about.
Jason in Perry, Oklahoma. You're on the air. Welcome to On Point, Jason.
Hi, Jane. Hi. I think that what the gentleman just said is true, but you just hear black, white, Russia, black, white, Russia, black, white, Russia, all over and over again on the news waves. And we had played John Oliver a second ago. You'll remember before the election, he had these viral videos that were so smug and certain that he was right about the political climate in America. He was urging Trump to run for president. Well, how politically competent is he? And God bless Jimmy Kimmel. God bless these guys. Nobody wants to see Jimmy Kimmel go through stuff like that, but this is a total echo chamber. And I'm shocked to see that it has continued past the election. Now, if you watch these shows before the election, you would be certain that Hillary Clinton was going to win, as many people were. This is just a selected audience of America that is represented by these people, and they alienate 50% of the country by making these jokes. I don't understand it. What do you guys think?
Jason, thank you. Bill Carter, to his point, I mean, don't these comedians prove Donald Trump's point that the media is biased, that these comics are part of a larger media landscape run by partisans?
I can't argue with the point that the comedians seem to have a universal point of view on this. I think there are places that would welcome a conservative comedy show. I think Fox has tried things like that. There aren't many great conservative comics, and there are even fewer great conservative comedy writers, apparently. And we can talk about why that is. I mean, it does seem like the comics, if you grow up to wanting to be funny, you try to skewer power, and that's what draws you into this business. But it's certainly true that there aren't many of them, and I think a network would welcome a show like that if one could be created that was as good as these shows, because these are very high level comedy shows. It just doesn't happen. I absolutely agree with the caller by saying it seems like it's one note all the time, and I expect that I said it months ago. There's going to be a point where people are just exhausted by this. They just, how can they watch it every single night? The same, you know, target being hit this hard. But what is obvious is that the news changes all the time, and Trump creates more fields of fire, more things that they want to take shots at, and the audience is still responding to them. And Bob pointed out, Stephen Colbert was nowhere until he said, I've got to do this. This is who I am, and came out with passion. And that's part of this. The hosts are real people. You get to see them every night. You get to know who they are. And this is who they are. This is sincere. And they believe these things. And I think that's really why it's effective and continues to go on.
Bill Carter asks, you know, is the audience going to be exhausted? Bob Thompson, what is the emotion we're after when we watch these comics? Are we trying to laugh when we feel sad, when we feel scared? I mean, what do you think we're after?
Well, that all depends on the viewer. I think different people go to these things for different reasons, even at different times of the day. But one thing I think we should remember is that comedy is all about, Bill just said it, it's about skewering authority. Now that authority, the president of the United States happens to be Donald Trump, and he happens to be delivering daily material to skewer. But we should also remember that Jon Stewart, now I'm not saying that Jon Stewart is a conservative by any stretch of the imagination, but Jon Stewart on The Daily Show went after the Obama administration, sometimes pretty with a lot of voltage. And of course, we should also remember back during the good old Clinton administration, Jon Stewart started on The Daily Show when they were doing constant day after day after day, Monica Lewinsky, Bubba, French fry kinds of jokes.
Right. Right. Let's get Michael
but
in
I
here.
Would point out, okay, if go ahead, I might, Bill, I would point out, yes, and Bob is totally right about the Clinton was killed by Saturday Night Live and the late night shows for obviously his excesses, the whole Monica Lewinsky thing. But it was because of, you know, his peccadilloes or whatever, sexual peccadilloes, et cetera. I think they just don't like this guy. I think they think he's dangerous. I think they think he's doing real damage to the country. This is what's really different. I mean, there's real anger behind the joke. I mean, Seth Meyers, you know, Seth, who's a terrifically nice human being, a wonderful guy. I mean, he's really upset a lot of the times about what's going on. And that, to me, is so unusual and different. And I think part of the reason why they're not getting away from it is they can't. It's now raging in their blood to do this. And it's going to continue, I think, throughout the Trump administration. It's just not going to change.
Talk about rage comedy, Bob Thompson. I'm reading Samantha Bee here calling Donald Trump a tangerine-tinged trash can fire, a sociopathic 70-year-old toddler, America's burst appendix. I mean, it's rough stuff.
Yeah.
The title of that show is just perfect because she does a full frontal assault every single week that she's on the air. Even with John Oliver, I would say Samantha Bee is probably the most unapologetic about this. And she's also one of the few female voices we've got in the game.
Right. Let's get Michael in here from Columbia, Missouri. Hi, Michael. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Thank you. I just want to say one thing about the talk show host is the reason that a lot of people listen to them, they don't have lobbyists in their pocket. They talk from their heart, and people can trust them. They don't know what's behind politicians' views. And also the younger crowd probably watches more on them than they do nightly news. And John Oliver, I like him because he covers a lot of very important subjects that no one else ever covers on the media.
John, Michael, thank you. John Oliver, increasingly popular. Let's get Renee in here from Newport, Rhode Island. Hi, Renee. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm a college student, and I just want to say something about, like, the rage comedy. After the election, all of my family and friends, like, were like, well, what now? We were so surprised. And like having comedians talk about this in such a way, like I don't have a problem with them talking about this because that's exactly how we feel. We're angry and we want to laugh about it at the end of the day because what else do you do?
Renee, thank you very much for the call. Let's get Ryan in here from Portland, Maine. Hi, Ryan.
Hi. Hey, it's funny to hear you earlier comparing the right wing echo chamber with the left wing when the right wing is calling themselves news and they're calling themselves fair and balanced, when nobody on the left has ever claimed to be news or fair and balanced. They're just calling it like they see it, and the way we see it is we have a buffoon who is a disgrace to this country as president right now. And they're not alienating half the country. This president's approval ratings are down in the 30%, so it's a very good gamble to bet on the other 60-something percent of us.
Ryan, thank you. Let me play some sound here. Stephen Colbert in July asking British actor Andy Serkis, who played Gollum in the Lord of the Rings movies, to read Trump tweets in Gollum's voice.
The fake news media has never been so wrong or so dirty. Purposely incorrect stories and phony sources to meet their agenda of hate. Sad.
Bill Carter, Bob Thompson, I know you guys do this for a living. Who do you watch? Who's on your DVR, Bill?
Well, I try to watch them all. I mean, that's really what I've written two books about late night, yeah. And it used to be a lot easier when there were two or three guys to watch.
Yes.
Fortunately, you can watch the bits online, and I try to do that. And you know, if it's live, when I'm live, I'll jump around. I'll jump between Fallon and Colbert and Kimmel. And I also like James Corden, who I think is very funny and not as pointed, but he has a lot of ability. But I think Seth Meyers has done a phenomenal job of also injecting some real passion to his show. So I really try to be comprehensive. Yeah.
Bob Thompson, who's at the top of your list?
I also watched them all. I think I like Jimmy Kimmel the best. I learned the most from John Oliver. And I think the best writing is in that first act of Seth Meyers, which if people aren't staying up that late, they really should give it a try.
So wrapping this up here in the last minute that we've got, what kind of power do these hosts have in America today to shape public opinion? Bill Carter?
I'd say they would probably say they have none, but we have seen from the Kimmel example that they do have some. And by the way, we should point out that when these episodes happen, including we didn't mention the Charlottesville episode, and they universally come out and condemn them. And by the way, Fallon deserves credit. He did come out and make a statement at that point. You do get the sense that the country is in some place where this needs to be done. And they're like stepping up. Remember when David Letterman stepped up after 9/11? These guys take this seriously. They're taking that part of the responsibility. They have to speak to America when America is genuinely upset.
Bob Thompson, last word. Final thought is yours.
Well, I think these things are important, not so much that they change people's minds, but they give people a way to articulate things. And I think that's significant. Late night still matters. There's a reason there were two late night wars, a book of each of which Bill Carter wrote, because it still matters.
Great hour. Terrific conversation. Listeners, thank you very much. Bob Thompson, director of the Blear Center for Television and Pop Culture at Syracuse University. Come back, Bob. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Bill Carter, CNN media analyst, contributor to The Hollywood Reporter, and author of The War for Late Night, When Leno Went Early and Television Went Crazy, literally wrote the book on this stuff. Bill, thank you very much for being here.
Great conversation. Thanks.
Thank you. Coming up Monday, big companies scooping up foreclosed houses, turning them into rentals, and changing neighborhoods. Tom Ashbrook is back for that. I'm Jane Clayson. Have a great weekend. This is On Point.